Welcome to Gaia's Consciousness Podcast, expanding your mind and spirit. Learn even more at Gaia.com. Watch interviews, movies, and original series created to empower the evolution of consciousness. For more information, visit GaiaPodcast.com. Your journey begins here.
As we see society losing its bearings in terms of discernment and truth, we can find sanity in some of the ancient mysteries of times past. Manly P. Hall dedicated his life to the preservation and perpetuation of the great teachings in his book, The Secret Teachings of All Ages. Our guest today, Stephen Ross, spent time with Hall and had the profound gift of being allowed into his private vault of documents, where he found unknown works by Manly P. Hall. I mean, this is a big deal. This is 1928, almost 100 years ago when he wrote this. People don't understand. Manly was a young man, but he was downloading from other realms and lifetimes of knowledge. And we're going to go into how you ended up in his sphere and in his vaults, and then surprise everybody with what follows. Welcome back, Stephen.
Thank you, Regina. I always appreciate you inviting me here and allowing me to share with your audience.
Oh, I love it. It's just, it's always so, you know, I always close my eyes and take a little breath just before the camera comes on. And whenever you're here, it's just, there's so much heart energy in term, and besides all of the kind of massive light around the top side. I just love it.
Thank you.
So let's start in the late 1970s. When you went to a Friday night lecture in Los Angeles,
yes,
where Manly P. Hall, you know, centered his work.
Correct. I really was introduced to the esoteric or metaphysical information in 1974. And in 1978, someone had mentioned to me about a great philosopher, Manly P. Hall, and his Philosophical Research Society, an incredible place, 50,000 volumes with materials dated to BC. So I wandered down to the center on a Friday night lyceum, and there were about 70 people in this room. Now, I was not the bravest of individuals with my math science background and sports wandering into a philosophy place,
right,
and esoteric. So I did what I did in that time. I went way in the back. I sat in the last row.
A little
all
coward
the way.
In their 20s.
There
okay.
you go. Just a fly on the wall. Mm-hmm. And in the front of the room was a blackboard. Mm-hmm. There were six sentences written. And in the front were three individuals who were the moderators. There was two gentlemen who I later would find out had followed Mr. Hall for about 35 years. And then a woman named Pearl Thomas, who was the personal librarian at the PRS, and they would answer questions of this previous Sunday's Mr. Hall lecture. Every Sunday he lectured.
Right. Then the following Friday night.
They would discuss six or seven points. So the meeting was going along, and somebody in the audience asked the moderators, what about point number six? And all of a sudden, Pearl Thomas raises up her hand and points into the audience, and she was pointing right at me, and I could see people shifting their positions so she wouldn't be pointing at them. And the next thing I remember,
so the crowd parted and the fingers pointing at
the
you.
The seas parted, and there it was, the finger pointed at me, and I'm thinking, what is this? But I ended up speaking. I did not remember what I said, but when I finished, everybody was looking at me, and it just so happened after that, the group broke up, and I was looking to leave. Pearl Thomas, who I found out, she was in her late 80s, had been with Mr. Hall for 60 years. She says to me, how long have you been studying Mr. Hall? How many books have you read? I said, I've never read any of his books. Well, how many lectures have you attended? I've never heard him lecture. And she said to me, young man, because I was young then,
yeah, you're
back in the
20s,
70s,
yeah,
please visit me tomorrow, Saturday, in the library. So the next day I go into the library, magnificent. Regina, 50,000 books all behind glass. You would find a book, talk to the librarian. She would open it with the key. You would read it, and then it's returned. So I spent that day in this incredible place. And then after my third visit, Pearl Thomas said to me, you just open up, you take the books out, I trust you. Well, that night I had a dream. And I wrote the dream down, and you and I have had shows before talking about dreams, and dreams have guided me. So I brought the dream to Pearl, and she gasped. She goes, oh, I think Mr. Hall should see this. So she apparently gave it to Mr. Hall, and 3 days later, he calls me up and invites me to visit him. Now, Mr. Hall was in such demand that nobody really could get appointments with him.
Right.
And it was very funny because people, I was told, would call and say, this is Plato, this is Jesus Christ, I would love to meet Mr. Hall. So they were screaming and nobody was getting in there. But he calls me up and I meet him. And just as you and I are looking at each other, he looks at me and he goes, who are you?
Well, that's the big fat question, isn't it? Who is Stephen Russ? Well, we have some ideas. I have some ideas, but you are a unique human being.
And I said, I am a student. And he said, why have you come? And I said, I want to get into your personal vault. And he said, okay.
And just like that.
Just like that. And the reason he did was because his Philosophical Research Society was built in 1934. My dream was how he wanted to build the PRS, but he did not have enough money. And he, of course, this would be in the 1920s. I wasn't born until 1949, so he knew there was no way I could know. It was a calling card for my spiritual sources that allowed me to go into his personal vault, not the 50,000 books, but his personal vault, and Xerox what I wanted to with the proviso. I would never sell any of those books that I found in there while he was alive, because his society was reprinting old books.
But the point was that he saw you, who you really are, and he trusted you because of the ethics of your being, and also the deep, deep, deep knowledge that you bring through. And you have. I mean, you've been doing this your whole life. And obviously that's what happened that day when you say you don't know what you said. You streamed some apparently pertinent information through that the group took notice of. And so he already knew, because he has the same abilities. So he was primed to meet with you and to trust you. So you started photocopying, including ancient, ancient parchments. And as I read in the foreword of the book, or the introduction, you wrote that you actually incurred some eyesight damage.
Yes.
At the time, as a result of the photocopying.
Of course, because I was taking books written in 1620, 1650, 1700, walking out of the vault, walking down a corridor, and putting them on a Xerox machine, praying that the bindings wouldn't break as I was Xeroxing each page one by one. In fact, the interesting story was, when I did it the very first time, the very first book, I walk out of the vault, and the business manager of the Philosophical Research Society, this woman went nuclear. She had never seen or heard of me before. And she goes, what are you doing? And literally grabbed me by my collar. I'm going to put you in the room with Mr. Hall. Well, she put me in there. He looks at me, I look at him. I said, I'm just doing what we discussed. Fine, I walk out. She, I don't know what she expected, but I just looked
at
her.
Thought you were gonna get a spanking.
I really do believe that. And I was a little uppity. I was like that then, but I just said, no, I'm just gonna continue. My eyes would kind of be turned away, but that Xerox light, I Xeroxed about 30 ancient alchemical texts, some manuscripts that have never been printed. With that opportunity, I really was there about 5 months. So,
I mean, what's amazing is, and we'll get to that later, but you now possess what some would call the new Manly P. Hall modern day library, because yours is very similar. This incredible library that you have that, you know, we're talking off camera. We've been friends for a long time, but book merchants will come around and start salivating when they see what right. you have in there. Some of it under glass also.
Right.
Very, very ancient. So do you think that it was your exposure to Manly P. Hall's library that really gave you kind of the impetus and imbued you with the desire to create this library of your own, this amazing material?
I would like to say yes, but I will say that I always had this innate feeling, and I've also had numerous past lives that I've been...
A librarian?
A librarian. How did you ever guess that?
Because you call yourself a librarian.
I'm just a librarian, but I have done it before. I'll tell you what I did pick up from Manly Hall. Manly Hall had more books in print than any living author while he was alive. He never...
And that's saying something, including
yes,
Rudolf Steiner and others.
Absolutely.
Right.
He wrote... It was the way that he wrote. He never really wrote books on phenomena. His goal was how individuals could live a more balanced, loving, beautiful life. Because people can be into the phenomena, but that doesn't mean that they're happy.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that they're healthy. Manly Hall wrote with such beauty on a variety of topics. What I picked up from him was the understanding that it isn't about how much an individual knows that you meet. It is how you unfold within your own self. And throughout all of his writings, he never is encouraging people to follow his way. So what I picked up was just an incredible understanding that all of these materials that are written that are really of a profound nature, mm-hmm. are encouraging individuals to unfold and unflower themselves. There are too many egos existing in this field. People who will go and say, oh, anybody can do it, but if you really listen to them, they're encouraging you to have to come to them, mm-hmm. because only they have the answer.
Right.
And it was interesting to note in the materials I learned from Mr. Hall was where he said, what I've written may seem contradictory sometimes, but everything, its intent is to point you in a direction. I am never going to give you the answers, he would say, but my intent is to point you in the direction. So I made a vow. That is the strongest thing that came out of my experience there. My vow is to encourage people, to help them see what their own potential is, to light up the area around them and let you know everything that's possible for you. Or another analogy I use is, I'm like a bus stop bench. People will come, will share, but they're gonna go on their bus route and I'm gonna go on my bus route. But during that time, we've exchanged. That is what was the most impactful. And so the library that I have, hopefully it's the same way. When people come, what I tell them is, I am just going to talk about different sections. You don't even have to keep up with me as I circle. I'm going to keep talking. If something appeals to you, you stop and you look at it. And I just go about my way talking, and they may be 5 bookcases back in another section. These are the profound people, I believe, on this planet, Regina, are the ones that don't encourage us to follow them.
Yes.
They encourage us to be within our own selves. There is an old saying, if we follow wise people, we weaken ourselves. But if we follow ourselves, we become wise people.
Very truly said. Before we get into this, what you were able to photograph in the vault has much of it come out? Because we're going to talk about some major information that was in that vault that's just now coming out, literally 92 years after it was written.
Right.
Was there quite a bit of that in there?
Well, there was some of the old alchemical books have been reprinted now. Mm-hmm. When I did the Xeroxing in 78, 79, we just didn't have that. Now, quite a lot of reprints come out of India, and they come out with beautiful
yes.
leather binding, and they're very inexpensive. And it's good, because I'm a very firm believer. I would rather have a photocopy of ancient information if I can't have the original. It's not about the
right.
original. It's about the information.
Right.
And quite a few of those have been reprinted. I might have jumped. Manly Hall died in 1990.
Mm-hmm.
I might have jumped on a lot of reprinting of some of the alchemical texts, but that's not where I was coming from at the time. But what really attracted me was none of the books, but a little notebook that said,
yes.
last second material arrived too late to be included in the secret teaching book. The book, The Secret Teaching of All Ages, which is magnum opus, was the greatest book of all the books Manly Hall wrote. So that really attracted me. But I've got to say that my spiritual sources that led me to say, I want to go into your private vault,
right.
directed me to...
to that notebook
to
for
that.
A reason.
Exactly.
First of all, let's just take the big boy up, you know, Secret Teaching of All Ages, okay? So here we have, and this book is so beautiful. So this one we found, for example, is the image of as above, so below. And the way he was able to depict this in the magnificent artwork embedded with the symbolism is as important as the text.
And in this notebook that... the information was not included. People have bought this book, which was published in 1928.
Right.
And they have just read it straight. But in the series of lectures that Manly Hall gave in 1928, which were not included in this book, he speaks about how he envisioned people reading this book and how they were to approach this book chapter by chapter, symbol by symbol. And that's what makes this material very, very important that I did find in his vault, was that he was talking about the true intent of the book. Now, when a book comes out, you would believe the true intent is somebody is sharing information. And we're satisfied with that. But when somebody has writings about the deeper reasons why the book has been written, you would really want to know that.
Well, yeah, it's the key.
It is the key.
Yeah.
And that is what I found in these materials, is his key of saying not only how to approach the book, but within here saying the italicized words are leading to a mark and part of the inner teachings of the inner teachings. And that is very, very profound from an individual who had the awareness and knowledge that the Manly Hall had. You know, he would give lectures that he charged $1 the first time he lectured until his last lecture. When they're typed out, they're 15 pages single-spaced, and he never used notes.
Yeah.
He would just get...
that was like Steiner.
Up.
Just streamed it.
And so here, when he's talking about the big book and these materials, for those individuals who are not only into him and have got the book, but people who are studying and learning in this field, it's very important to have.
So essentially what he was saying is that if you read this book with the understanding that when you see italicized words or phrases, you're being given a symbol.
Exactly. And then he goes deeper by saying people are not really understanding what symbols are meant to do. there is a little bit more to symbols than people realize. The ancients set up the symbols in their time to evoke things having to do with the mind, the spirit.
Access between dimensions.
Exactly. And what's happened is, over time, when people start attaching their analysis of a symbol, it starts changing from what those original symbols really were meant to be sharing with individuals who would be gazing. Because it's about how we observe anything that is very important. And basically what these pages were, Manly Hall intended to put the pages here into the big book, but when they weren't able to get in because they arrived at the printer
too late.
So then he thought, okay, I have some pages, I might as well turn them into lectures. So here we have 20 lectures elaborating further upon where he might have had one page in the book. There's now three or four pages with a more full-blown lecture on a particular topic.
This is not edited. This is in his original typewritten,
absolutely,
on a typewriter documents.
Yes, exactly how,
yes,
I found it.
Yes.
What I did was I put an introduction. I have not even commented on any of the materials other than what you and I are doing now, purely because I don't think we should always accept somebody else's analysis, what they believe something is saying.
You're talking about something that is really more a matter of consumption versus engagement. And I think we are a consumptive species right now. We've,
yes,
been led to be consumers. So it's a kind of a double-edged sword in a way, in that you have all this incredible ability to access ancient teachings of all kinds from throughout the ages because of the internet.
Right.
And, you know, if you're going to do snail mail away, because of libraries, the one or two in the world that exists like yours, people can get that information.
Yes.
It's there for us to engage with. But instead, it's easy oftentimes to say, oh, you know, I fall prey to it. I'm guilty of it myself. Oh, I saw an interview with so-and-so, and that was really cool. I'm going to incorporate that into my own stuff, you know?
Right.
It's really easy to do that, but it's hard to actually sit down and take the time to engage to where your life becomes this more fulsome expression of these principles.
And what I would love for your audience to get out of this show is that they trust themselves, that they recognize that wisdom comes from experience. Wisdom comes from a lifestyle. This is why when we look at these ancients and call them wise, it is because they didn't all of a sudden wake up and they were wise. It was how they lived their life, how they observed nature, not only of the world, but the nature of people. What somebody should get out of what our sharing is to trust themselves, to be observant, and to recognize knowledge and belief. Knowledge is when you have firsthand contact with something. Otherwise, it's a belief.
Everyone watching this has their own divine genius and beauty and is looking for that core truth in themselves.
Yes.
So this is one doorway to it.
Gaia.com lets you explore over 8,000 films, documentaries, and original series.
There's so much going on in the unseen world.
Hidden truth.
Why in the media today? They still seem to hold back on these incredible stories.
Behind an unknown universe.
Where science and spirituality all come together.
Gaia.com. Content you can't find anywhere else. For more information, visit GaiaPodcast.com.
You're going to share with us five of the essence of five of the missing chapters, obviously not the whole thing, and including symbolism,
yes,
and including one primal symbol, which ironically I interviewed another man named Robert Gilbert on, and he really focused on this Manly P. Hall symbol, which is the symbol, the Hermetic symbol, the Egyptian symbol, the circle with the dot at the center.
Yes.
That's one of them.
Yes.
So we'll do that, but we'll do a few others as well. So let's talk about the nature of that kind of symbolism.
Manly Hall used the example of all existence as a piece of paper. mm-hmm. with the idea that the paper just went on endlessly and is completely blank. And the dot he identified as God, or the first aspect coming out of the void of nothingness. And he goes on to talk about a dot, a line, and a circle. And he ties in that original dot with what he considers absolute philosophy. There's absolute philosophy, there's relative philosophy. For him, absolute philosophy was a total understanding, an awareness of whatever. You are going to the actual source of whatever something might be.
Right.
The cause, not the effect. As you go from this dot and you make a line, you have something in action. And in action is already coming from out of that dot, out of the cause, and you now are working towards an effect. And so in a very easy way, in 4 pages, which I certainly can't do in 2 minutes,
no.
The idea is that these symbols are representative of what takes place not only in the world, but within an individual, and within an individual's mind, and within an individual's even spiritual essence. That dot is the original aspect. Some people may call it the hermetic secret, the alchemical secret,
right.
But it is a place that you want to be going towards, rather than being on the line where you're going in action, you are going back to a place of inaction. But this is representative in other cultures, whether it's Buddhism, where you quiet yourself down, meditation. It isn't about the action. It isn't about what political party you belong to. It isn't about what religion you belong to. You don't take those with you. You take the essences with you. You take what you learn with you, but you don't take any kind of material aspects with you. This is going in line with exactly what you're talking about. The more that people stress and look at the activity that they're involved with, the further away they are getting from where they need
their
to
essence,
be.
The essence.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because people need to ask a fundamental question. Why am I here? What is the purpose that I am alive and breathing in this reality?
Okay, let's go into, here's another area. So we kind of skipped right through to the real, like I said, primal essence
right.
of symbolism.
Yes.
One of the other chapters is on agents and elements used to perpetuate knowledge.
And we're going to get right back again because it's all about symbols. It is about what you do when you see a symbol. The original intent by the ancients, anybody who creates a symbol, is to invoke much deeper awareness than most people would think. Now you look at a symbol, you go, oh, it's McDonald's. Oh, it's the Rosicrucians. Oh, it's
Chanel.
The Hermetic. It's Chanel. That's surface dwelling. But the original formation of these symbols evokes responses very, very deep within an individual psyche. So the keys, what you just read there, is these symbols, when you really discern, when you observe them, when you discern them, when you really take the time. People say what's like mandalas.
Well, yeah, you allow your whole field to be open to it.
Exactly.
Without expectation or projection.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the secret of this is, and what Manly Hall did in his big book, and what he elaborated here was, approach it wide open.
Yes.
And this was something that I've been very lucky in my life. And probably you've experienced this too. Somebody with some topic will come to you and they'll start explaining. They go, you probably already know this. Yeah, they're speaking about some nuclear physics. I have no idea what they're talking about. But here's what they'll say. They'll go, you already know this, so I'm sorry. Well, I may not know it. And even things I do know, when I am with somebody new, I don't.
You don't know it the way they know it.
And I will not, I will just approach this as, I am going to listen to everything you're sharing with me. I know nothing. Right. I don't know. Once they finished, then I can let my whatever wisdom, knowledge bubble up and say, wow, I had heard this, I assumed that. Nobody is listening today to other people. And this is bringing us further and further away
from the dot.
Yes.
I mean, even in science now, Manjir Samantalottin, a wonderful MD, former MD in Britain, who had her own experiences, kind of like Nassim Harmin, on the subject of black holes. And it just hit her one day. She just saw it all. And that now there's more and more evidence for the truth of this as they're starting to understand black holes a little better. It's not something that sucks the life out of it. These are the points, the centers of all creation, and they're even at the center of the cells of our body, constantly receiving information and then, as you say, outputting into whatever
and
that line
is a beautiful image of Manly Hall, as above, so below.
Yes.
That it reiterates constantly from the mundane world which we are in to the spiritual world. It is all reiterated over and over again.
And this is the part that I think, that I find beautiful about it, is the multidimensionality of it, in that if a black hole or that point, the dot, is the essence, meaning the pure flow of the original information coming forth from us, from ourselves, from the universe, from the great Godheads. This is coming through many dimensions, not just ours. It's coming from this incredible plenum of all.
Yes.
And we represent that. Every one of us, every cell in our body represents that.
Absolutely.
And could be, if we're open, if we're healthy, if we have an open attitude, receiving impulses even through the cells of our being of this interdimensional, multidimensional information.
I mean, to be telling the world this.
You already are.
No.
But it's just, to me, beautiful. That's how I view life. And I view the notion of this point of these black holes. And Manly P. Hall's, you can go all through these beautiful drawings and all the symbolism, but what does it really come down to in terms of this creative force that exists throughout the universe and throughout humanity?
He mentioned the book is only a gateway.
Yeah.
This is only a gateway. Now, it's interesting, again, would have been nice if he had put that in the introduction of his actual book, but he says it in 1928 to this group. I don't know how many people were in attendance for these 20 lectures. He did it over 21 days, one night after another. I mean, it's really remarkable, but he said, don't expect this book is not going to give you the immediate answers. It is merely a gateway.
Yes.
And that is what I hope my life will mean to others, is it's only a gateway. And we're allowed to do this when somebody comes and says, Steve, why is it you and I buy our shoes at the same shoe store, but your feet don't seem to hurt? What they're saying is, why is your philosophy, what is your philosophy when you are going through the same things, but it doesn't seem to bother you? This is when people open a door. And then we can share. For me, it's more Leffel, which is laughter, excitement, fun, and love.
Yeah.
But to get people there, you have to kind of convince them, because they think everything has ended because of the politics right now. I'm going to say it's challenging, but people should not lose who they are and where they are and what is truly going on now. This has been a big wake-up call. Right. Maybe it wouldn't have happened if all of the tumblers didn't come to create what we have now.
I think it absolutely had to happen.
And absolutely.
As other channeled works by people that I know and talk to and have done interviews with say, this is the time of the ages. It's been thousands of years since you've had such an amazing opportunity and opening to now shift upward in terms of your consciousness and the way you want to have a sustainable planetary life.
Yes, exactly.
This is the time. So we have. That's why we have to employ that incredible truth. I want to get back to one more
point
in here or before we go on.
Okay.
And that is, one of the other points that you feel free sharing with us is relationship existing between the substance of mind and the substance of spirit. Explain that a little bit for us.
What Manly Hall went on to say here is the understanding that one's mind is not really who they are. Mm-hmm. People just assume, all of us, our ego, our mind, is who we are.
Our thoughts.
Our thoughts. That is who we are. And the substance of the mind is physical. The mind and the spirit are vastly different. And the mind can be looked at as clothing that we put on in a particular living, along with the ego that we accept. And ego, by the way, is not a bad thing.
It's just a sense of identity.
Right. And there's people who've said, I've got to get rid of my ego, and I have to share with them.
No, that's a sense of who and what you collectively have become.
Exactly. What you really are asking is you want to spiritualize your ego.
Right.
But if you didn't have an ego, you wouldn't be existing.
Right.
So the substance of the spirit. Now, again, the symbols can be accepted just by the substance of the mind. What the mind has been conditioned to remember, what it has observed, then the mind will look at a symbol and quickly interpret exactly how you've just said it. Oh, black hole really means this. But the substance of the spirit is more encompassing. Mm-hmm. And when we observe from our spiritual essence and look at things that we look at all the time with our mind, it is vastly different.
Mm-hmm.
When one is perceiving or apperceiving the essence, the light beings that we are, they are not as inclined to look at the substance, which is the color,
mm-hmm.
the hair,
yeah,
or no hair. Yeah. They are looking at pure essence. The substance of the spirit is bringing us to essence. The substance of the mind is generally physical, the size, the color. We want to look beyond that. And if we were looking at that, this world would be quite different than it is right now, because we have actually taken 10 steps backward, in my opinion. There is more segmenting, more separation, more taking it away, forgetting that everybody bleeds the same color right now, which is not the light of the spirit, but that is still a physical substance. Hey, we're of the same blood, but we're just far away. So the substance of mind, the substance of spirit are vastly different, and we can arrive there.
Mm-hmm.
So the substance of spirit goes back to the essences of objects, of people, of nature. And this is what this lecture that he gave was trying to present to people, that yes, the conditioning is you look at it from your mind. Where you want to get back to is the essence of the spirit. The substance of spirit is light.
Yes.
And you want to be apperceiving everything in its light essence.
So beautifully said. And Stephen, we brought this up in other shows, but all of this comes into the abilities that we will see, we will understand, we should understand now, in fact, that we all innately possess, that we will be expressing in the future. The material world is not what we think it is.
Right.
It's immaterial in nature. How our minds and our hearts and our emotions function can program outcomes that have a material effect but are of a non-material nature.
Yes.
And this, I've said this before in other shows, you develop somewhere along the way the ability to assist people in their healing process, which is a very condensed and quick process you go to if a person sincerely wishes to reverse the imbalance in their body.
Right.
And you've dealt with many, 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 many people and every single kind of condition.
But you know why? Because I love them.
You love them. Exactly. You have this heart that I said at the very beginning.
Right.
You have this heart energy that comes out and meets with their desire to be whole again. And in that, you work through non-material means, pure information, pure space, like a black hole, reprogram it, and health resumes in these people. And that's not what we're talking about directly.
Right.
That is the extension of what we're all capable of if we can understand the essence of our true nature. That's just one thing we're capable of.
Right. And again, why I think this is pertinent is if somebody is going to be pointing the way, you would want them to point you in the safest direction possible that will get you where you want to go. That is, again, why I've admired Manly Hall's material, is he is doing it in its pure form.
Yes.
Rather than saying, well, okay, I read this, and this is what I feel, and I'm pointing you. No. This is just pure. This is what you want to go towards. It is, again, when I talk about an example of Plato and Aristotle. Aristotle's complaint with Plato was, he's not telling you exactly how to get. If the end result is this glass, Plato would just be telling you, you want to arrive at this glass. For Aristotle and the scientific approach, it's like, how exactly do you get there?
For how you get
there. How do you get there? Yeah. How many miles? How many feet? How many inches? Then you are locked into that particular approach. I enjoy Manly Hall's not the only one. There's other great philosophers. The less that they put their own spin on something. And now let's go into even what's happening in the world. If each one of these stations puts their own spin, all we do is spin. You turn the TV, you got this channel.
Oh, everyone's spinning out.
It's spinning, 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 spinning. You know what somebody should go down to? Empathy, love. Maybe this sounds trite, but if people are claiming that they're religious, go back to the teachings. Empathy, love. Help thy neighbor.
Yes.
Now ask yourself, one should ask himself, who is doing it and am I doing it?
Exactly. And you know, this is something too, when you're talking about the notion of putting the principle out and letting people take it as they will. This is something that came up in an interview I did with the Theo group recently with Sheila Gillette and talked to those beings. And they said, and some people took offense at it because they were in personal pain. They said, this is a magnificent period of human history. This is your opportunity to use everything you've learned, your creativity, and your innate intellect, and work together to now create the kind of world you want to live in. And people are like, yeah, well, what are we supposed to do? I mean, they didn't tell us what to do. Missed the point. The point is for you to employ these things in you and join with others to create this new world the way you want to see it.
Right. And people don't realize the ancient teachings says we are all creators.
Yes.
We are down here to demonstrate how we manage creative energy. We are creators. We can create our world in the way that we want to. Someone may say, well, but this is happening. No. It's your perception and how you handle what is happening that is going to reflect what the outcome is for you.
Exactly.
And that's always going to be that case.
Indeed. Stephen, any final thoughts? Because we're just about out of time.
What happened?
Well, good question.
How is that possible, Regina?
Well, okay. It's happened, and it's here we happened. Are, and we're trying to recover ourselves. Instead of waiting for other people to dictate what our world's going to look like, what we're going to salvage from it, what looks similar to how it was before and what still exists now, instead going to that center point and figuring out who we are and how we want to participate
right.
in it. To me, that's critical. That's everything.
Yes. And that's what I would say. And I would like people to leave right now with this thought. Everything is possible.
Indeed.
We are creators. And the more that we accent the positive, the more positive the world will become.
Amen, my friend. Thank you so much for being here, Stephen.
Again, thank you.
You'll be able to access this information for yourself in Stephen's new book he just mentioned, Unpublished Pages of the Secret Teachings of All Ages. Now, if you enjoyed this conversation, you're probably going to enjoy our other talks here on Gaia. Just look for them in the archives.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gaia's Consciousness Podcast. Learn even more at Gaia.com and watch interviews, movies, and original series, all to empower the evolution of consciousness. For more information, visit GaiaPodcast.com. Gaia. Watch. Belong. Transform.